time together. We're gonna have a real good time together. Oh, we're gonna laugh and dance and shout together.
Good afternoon, welcome to Heartbreaking. I'm Charlie Finch, glad to have you with us, and what a great pleasure it is welcoming back Sylvia Miles, two-time Academy Award nominee to Heartbreaking. This is your third visit, Sylvia.
It is, Charlie, and I'm breathless and awaiting it with...
And you're wearing your dad's sexy black fedora today.
Amazing anticipation.
I like that sexy black fedora.
It's the only thing he left me.
Also, Lisa Hoke, one of my favorite artists, is here. She takes the detritus of domestic life. Now she's using thread, actually, to make some incredible sculptures and installation work. And she's here with her dealer, the dapper Mr. Stuart Horodner. Lisa's show opens tonight at the Chic Horodner Romley Gallery at 107 Sullivan Street at 6 o'clock. And it promises to be one of the hot openings of the fall. Michael G. Haskins, would you pass that CD thing over to me? I just got it in the mail, and I've already forgotten what it is. Yes, Two Heads Are Better, the acoustic blues of Harmonica Fats and Bernie Pearl. We're going to hear just like a Richard Nixon, so stay tuned.
Away from them good. I don't know the reason why, but this is the word I heard. I was just like Richard Nixon running on down the line. I was just like Richard Nixon. I had to be a whim sometime. One of them girls, she ran so fast, finally caught up with me. Get her, let me go, but she just wouldn't let me be. She was just like Richard Nixon running on down the line. She was just like Richard Nixon. You had to be a woman sometime. Everywhere I go, every time I go in, seems like running from them young girls. Just think I'll never end. I'm just like Richard Nixon running on down the line. I'm just like Richard Nixon. I had to be a winner sometime.
Sylvia Miles, in addition to the black fedora, you're wearing a little black butterfly around your neck.
Yeah.
What's the story with that?
And I'm wearing a Todd Oldham a cross, and, well, actually, there's no story about how I look, really. It's what I think is the story.
I would disagree. What about that nude picture of you in the recent Movie Line magazine with Beverly D'Angelo in The Sentinel?
You know, it just occurred to me, which is kind of wild in a way. In that film, you know, obviously, you know, everybody called me up and said, did you see that picture? Which, by the way, I don't know if I ever told you this story, Charlie. We shot The Sentinel in 1976 during Tall Ships Week. And they got a house in the cul-de-sac in Brooklyn Heights. If you know what the cul-de-sac is, you know there's like a in Brooklyn Heights, there's like an esplanade where you can stand and look over the skyline of New York. And there are all these wonderful old mansions. And this house where we shot The Sentinel had to be the gates of hell. And on the top of the building, the Sentinel, who guards the gates of hell, which was, I think, one of the last roles that John Carradine played. He was the Sentinel. And then were all these stars in this movie. There were more stars in this movie than there are in the heavens. The least of which, I mean, it was the first film that Beverly D'Angelo made. She didn't even get billing. And Christopher Walken. But, I mean, Ava Gardner was in it. It just was endless. There were maybe 40 stars in this movie. And they got this house with the proviso that everybody could get their apartment back for the weekend of the Tall Ships when the Queen Elizabeth was coming over into the, you know, New York Harbor, right? And what they forgot, though, was that they had a whole bunch of freaks that were shooting up in the gates of hell, you know, and Beverly and I had to shoot with them, and they had stuck them in this one apartment, and they had forgotten all about them and evacuated the house for the weekend, and this man came home to his apartment, opened the door, and there were, like, you know, 60 village idiots in there that they had gotten, that they had collected from all over the world to play these sort of weird-looking people that were at the gates of hell.
Are you a horror film maven, a fan of horror films?
Well, I mean, I've done a few, as we say, artistic horror films. I've worked for Toby Hooper, who did the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I did Funhouse for him, which was a very interesting film that took place in a funhouse, and I was killed by the monster, who I ran into on the street the other day. He said, you remember me? I was the monster who murdered you. I said, no, I'm sorry, I don't. He was so deflated. He was really deflated. And I did The Sentinel. And, well, I mean, there are people that think a number of my films have been horror films, but actually they were not supposed to be.
Now, you know, Sylvia Miles, Paul Newman just resigned from the Board of the Actors
studio. Yes, as a matter
of fact. What do you think of that?
Well, what do I think about it? I think a lot about it because Marilyn Freed and Jackie Knapp and me, we ran this auction last year, which was September 21st, 1993. This being November 94, and we raised $250,000. And whatever money we raised at the time at the Actors Studio, Paul Newman would match that amount with his. He has a tremendous
popcorn and salad oil.
Well, no, he has a big charity heart. You know, he's got donates a lot of money for a lot of wonderful causes, and he has literally kept the Actors Studio afloat for many, many years. And, you know, we want to know where was that $250,000, because 15 minutes later they were looking for the money for the light bill. But anyway.
I love those acting anecdotes.
Huh?
I love those acting anecdotes.
Oh, yeah, I have a lot of those.
But you did a reading last night,
I did a reading last night at the Greenwich House of an interesting new play by a girl called Marilyn Seven. I hope, you know, it gets done, and by that time she'll make it Marilyn 11, you know, so... But it was very well attended, and I'm glad to say that I acquitted myself well. It used to be that there was a lot of work, or if not a lot of work, a lot more work, and you get paid. Now, they don't take shows out of town. They do them. They try them off Broadway, or they rent studio spaces and do what they call showcase productions. I don't know who they're showcasing, if I think the producer, because he doesn't want to spend the money to, you know, try the show out of town. The economics are so weird now in the theater and in show business in general.
And in the art world, too,
and
Sylvia.
When I speak about the theater, it's all the same thing. It's a different venue for the art world. It's finding an agent is the same thing as finding a dealer. You have a dealer here. I'm about to say to him, you know, maybe you know an agent. No, I'm teasing. What I mean is none of it is different. You know, people like to compartmentalize these things and make them different. What's different? Nothing. The struggle is the same for any artist on any level, and it's never any different from the day you start to the day you finish. People say, well, I couldn't have. I said, listen, you remember the last time I was here, I think I had been doing or had just done Ruthless or was about to do Ruthless. And the character I played, by the way, the writer told me was based on his conception. Of course, obviously it wasn't my life, but his conception of my life, you know, or the mythology of it that he'd read about or, you know, from seeing me in the movies. I said, by the way, since I was the concept for this role, how come you never called me and offered it to me? He says, well, you wouldn't have wanted to do it. I said, what do you mean? I lived this life. Why wouldn't I want to play it and get paid for it? You know, why just live it and, you know, be tortured? Why not be paid for it? So he said, I said, but you hired a man to do it. You had that part played in drag. Are you telling me that somebody professionally is going to play my life? It's a man in drag? You know, he said, no, but I thought that would be interesting. I said, well, why don't you hire me and I'll play it as a man?
Now, Sylvia Miles, you're a big art collector. In fact, Movie Line did a profile of your art collection maybe 2 years ago, right?
Oh, since then I've been actually, my apartment was in the March issue of Good Housekeeping, which I'm much more impressed with. You know,
wow.
Good Housekeeping makes you think like, wow, they approve of you. But even then, they couldn't give it to me all the way, Charlie. It was in an issue that you had to, like, not get on the newsstands. Like, if you subscribe, you got that story. Do you know what I mean? Only the, like, the expensive areas.
The bonus article.
Yeah, it's a bonus.
The fold-out.
Right, it's a fold-out, right. But it was interesting, wasn't it, recently, the Warhol sale at
I mean, Shot Red Marilyn, Holly Solomon, made a lot of money. I saw her Saturday night at her opening. And
she must have felt great.
She was looking, she was feeling no pain.
Yeah. Well, you see, that's it. You know, it's the same thing. It's the same thing in any, I mean, the art world is no different than the theater world or the, you know, musical world or rock and roll, or it's all the same. Everybody wants you to work for nothing.
Have you been over to Stuart Herodner's gallery by any chance on Sullivan Street?
Well, I don't know, but Stuart, did you know that my father's furniture factory was 178 Prince, which is between Thompson and Sullivan, right around the corner from your gallery?
I knew I was picking up good vibes.
You know
from
where Rowles?
I just didn't know where.
Do you know where Rowles is? Well, that was my, look at the building, and next to it there's a big doorway, and then there's like a sort of funky art gallery. That was my father's furniture factory, and I was born across the street. You know, Prince on the other side of 6th Avenue is Charlton. I was born at 11 Charlton. And I went to the Little Red Schoolhouse in Washington Irving High School. Nobody believes it, but it's true. And that was not Soho then. It was Little Italy and the West Village, you know. And you want to know something?
Where Stuart is, it's still Little Italy.
And the same people were on the street. they recognized me from when I was a kid, and I'm a little older.
They recognize you, but the monster seems to have forgotten you.
No, the monster.
She forgot the monster.
Now, you know, Lisa Hocus had a very successful year. She had a show at the Aldrich Museum. She was in a group show there, and she's been in group shows at PPOW and Russet Letterman Productions, both family-oriented shows. And now her great new thread pieces, and these were pieces that looked like they required a lot of work. And I warned Lisa that Sylvia Miles would be here, so Lisa has responded sartorially. She looks like she's wearing a Chicago gangster outfit from the 30s with a white starch collar and a suit complete with
I noticed, though, that one of the buttons was misplaced. Did you rebutton it?
It's
yes.
possible.
Nothing I like fashion wars.
No, straighten it. You had it right.
There.
Now you have to button it.
It's very important on radio to have those buttons right.
Now lean into the mic, Lisa.
Okay.
What's the story? And as we mentioned before, she's here with her dealer, the dapper Stuart Herodner, who
I think you should say her art dealer.
Her art dealer.
Right. Everything being politically correct and incorrect. And by the way, incidentally, I don't want to interrupt on your story, Lisa, but you know, we don't say depressed anymore, Charlie. We say optimistically impaired.
Well, Lisa, now you have made a real sort of radical change here. You've used shower curtains, buttons in the past, and now you're using thread. Why?
I don't see it as a radical change in that before the buttons, there was a host of other materials, mufflers and plastic and metal. And I see this as part of a continuing sort of just love of the everyday material. The thread is fascinating to me because once I got 300 pounds of thread and became less interested in the spools and started to unwind the thread, I found that there is this incredible action that could take place in making a sculpture. And before, with my work, I don't think the action was as important. And the gesture of throwing the thread out into the space and having it land on the floor was a pretty great experience. When I had this pile of thread on the floor, I wanted to in some way freeze it so that it held its sort of flight through the air.
So you borrowed Stuart Herodner's hairspray.
Well, almost.
I don't have any hair anymore, Charlie.
That was a joke.
One of the other artists in the gallery, Francois Morelli, had told me a story about his grandmother, and the tradition that she had was of spraying doilies, or I guess soaking doilies in sugar water, and then making a fruit bowl out of them, putting the fruit in the bowl, and the family would eat the fruit, and then she'd wash the doily in the weekly wash, and then remake the sculpture, so that when this thread was floating through the air, I thought, you know, this would be the perfect opportunity to use sugar water. I also liked the idea that to get the material I wanted, I just had to walk into the kitchen and get the sugar and the water, thus not leaving the house, not going to the hardware store.
Must have been fun having a small child with all that thread in your studio.
The dog is worse. The dog has the long tail that gets tangled every time she runs
through. I'm trying to figure out what to do with the spools. You could actually make furniture for height-impaired people, you know, with
well,
the spools.
Stacking them, you could make it for anybody.
Right.
Yes, nothing goes wasted in my studio.
Now, how much thread goes into one piece? These are really impressive pieces because they look incredibly fragile, and yet they're just really sort of rigid and stuck together.
Right. It's like a can, you know, the way sugar water, well, I've actually moved to white glue and water at this point, but sugar makes a very, I mean, look at a candy apple. It makes a pretty dense substance when it's soft.
But how about at night when you're not in the studio or at the gallery? Are there any little visitors coming to eat the pictures?
This is why I moved to glue and water, to get
rid
of...
other than the regular art world clientele.
Well, no, actually, to tell you the truth, you know, right, come to think of it, right, maybe they'd buy it to eat it.
Well, I actually, the new pieces are glue and water. The sugar was a vehicle to start, but too many issues about bugs...
wasn't there a lot of trial and error involved, Lisa Hoke, in making these work?
Always.
There always is with your work, but it must have been especially tough with this thread work.
Well, it was tough, and at the same time, it was very easy in that I set up for myself to try to break down the rules that I had sort of structured for the last body of work that I did. I found some of the things that I had ended with were very constricting, and I felt as though I wanted to do something that included more of the present tense and so that when I'm doing these and it's the gesture of doing, it can include things that happen at the moment, such as wrapping the finger, the string around my finger started to remind me of my mother throwing string into a string bag, any piece of string that came in the house. Well, because these pieces are existing in the moment instead of being structured previously, then I could go with that idea of the string bag, and then it moved, and then it became my grandmother's hair, and then it looked like the hair of all the members of my family and the same colors. And so the pieces have in a way been very generous for me because they've been able to include where I am emotionally at the moment.
Let's bring Stuart Herodner into the discussion. Herodner Romley is a cul-de-sac, Sylvia Miles, at 107 Sullivan Street. It's in an old bakery, right?
It was two small storefronts that we sort of turned into one. Actually, I have to comment on the thing that Sylvia said, which is the talking about being an artist and being an actor, being an actress, very few people reference it that way, which I love.
Which I get very upset by. Well, when I'm in a gallery, people will say, or all my friends are obviously writers and artists, like I'm sure all of yours are. I get so upset when they say, what are you doing here? I say, well, where should I be? You know what I mean? In a bakery, right? I mean, right. You know, my friends are painters and writers, and where else should I be but to support them, and they support me.
And how you try to develop your... how you try to move from one place to another. You don't walk out of your early training and go see Francis Coppola and ask him to play the lead in some film. You start someplace, it's a process, you move through it, you get better. The thing that's interesting about the two women in the studio is both of them push things over the top. Sylvia clearly.
Well, no, and we don't. As a matter of fact, I was telling Charlie last night, a number of artists came to the reading I did last night. Hedy Kleinman, for one, Marcus Leatherdale was there, Hans Lohnum was there. And Hedy Kleinman said to me, it was very interesting because seeing this play and hearing this play makes me think about some kind of work that I want to do. In other words, I don't know why people separate any of these. You know, art is art.
We're joined by Jimmy Durante's favorite radio host, David Rothenberg, WBAI's longtime and legendary Saturday morning host, and by arts director Anthony Sloan, who is going to be giving...
Well, Charlie, I can't believe you mentioned my humble name in the same breath as one David Rothenberg. I can't believe you did that. That must be a faux pas in radio history.
We know David ran for city council and is a great political activist with VID and others. Poor David doesn't want me to talk about him.
Why did you mention Jimmy Durante?
Because that's David's theme song.
You've got to start each day with a smile.
I am the only person that you ever met in your whole life, David, that does an actual impression of Jimmy Durante.
Do it now.
Did you ever have the feeling that you wanted to go? Still had the feeling that you wanted to stay? Umbriaco.
On that note,
it's time to give away some movie tickets.
On that note,
I may never work again as an actress after that impression.
Whether you want to go or stay. By the way, look, real quick, because I have to go answer phones. It's only one person today, only me, only little old me. So I'm giving out these tickets for as long as you call. For an hour, or no, as long as you call, okay? They're calling the radio, don't even want no tickets. I'm getting out. I can't believe this, right? But look, be disciplined about this. You have to be patient, okay? Just stay there, you know, and at 4 o'clock, I'll tell you it's all going. So I'll come back at 4. Call until 4, okay?
The number
to dial is 279-3400. I say that because everybody else is lining up, so I might as well do it now. After 20 minutes, going to get knocked off anyway. Sorry. Dingo, the only film that Miles Davis ever appeared in, playing a character. Anyway, we have the screening or the run of Dingo is at the Village East Cinema. And that's at 22 East 12th Street. And you'll be going any time between this Friday and next Thursday. It's an open run engagement anytime you show up. So if you call right now, I have to take your name and your stuff like that. And then, you'll get to see Dingo, the new film by Miles Davis. It starts this weekend. And you can go see it. Bye.
And give us the number again.
279-3400. Be patient. You can call until 4 o'clock, okay? Then after 4, don't call, because I ain't going to be there. Right, bye.
You're listening to WBAI 99.
Can Stuart finish what he was saying?
No.
Oh, okay.
I have no, but I refuse to do anything like a Jimmy Durante
impression. No. Could you finish what you started to say?
No, yeah, and it, the nature of people's involvement with learning in public, doing things, and finding out afterwards what they mean. Your work certainly is, some of my favorite, the crazy moments on film, and just working with Lisa this week as this show gets installed, is all about sort of letting go, all about putting it out there and not worrying.
Risk.
Feeling comfortable with that you're supported by a group of people and who want you to take risks.
Yeah, and
they actually want you not to be censored and self-censored.
That's an ironic thing, considering that on the panel we were on Monday night at the News School, that Stuart spent most of his time censoring me. But
but the point is, I think what Stuart means a priori is that there is a certain discipline to begin with. That, not that you don't have it, I don't mean that. But there's a certain discipline when you, in any craft, be that as an when you study, when you apply yourself, there's a craft. So when you say take risks, it doesn't mean that suddenly, you fling off your clothes. That's not a risk. That's, just blatant exhibitionism, maybe. Risk is not censoring yourself. It's going right for it without stopping and thinking what you're actually going for, following your intuition to go for that thing. And that is the same whether you're a musician, whether you're a painter, whether you're a performing artist, whether you're, you know, even a landscape gardener in a crazy way. You know, it's going for the ring.
We're listening to everyone finished commenting in this for this segment? Okay. We're talking with 2-time Academy Award nominee and good friend Sylvia Miles and Lisa Hoke's show opens tonight at Haradner Romley Gallery at 107 Sullivan Street. It's really first-rate work at 6 o'clock. Stuart Haradner is here, too, and David Rothenberg and Michael G. Haskins.
Stuart, white and red wine or just white wine? I'm teasing. No, I'm joking.
White and red.
I notice nobody serves red wine anymore.
Well, more red than white, I hope.
The Mad Hatter's Tea Party has begun, and we're listening to Two Heads Are Better, the new disc from Harmonica Fats and Bernie Pearl. This song is called Soul Food. Stay tuned.
Everybody's talking about soul food, and I can teach without going to school. I've been eating it all of my life. Taught my son and wife my soul food. That soul food. That soul food. That soul food. Don't seem like I get enough. All that crazy kind of stuff. That soul food. That soul food. I'd like to give you a recipe. How you fix a lot. Take some black eyed peas and rice and put them in a pot. Then you got a lot of talk about soul food. That soul food. That soul food. That soul food. Don't seem like I get enough. All that crazy kind of stuff. That soul food. That soul food. Mama used to cook some mustard green. Cook some corn bread. Cook a big pot of pig meat. The best you ever.
It's okay to have the background noise. Just a reminder, hello everyone. Next week on Art Breaking at 3 o'clock, November 17th, we'll be doing a show on the new Abbie Hoffman biography called Run, Abbie, Run from Putnam. It's written by Dan Simon and Abbie Hoffman's brother Jack Hoffman. Bob Fass has already weighed in with his opinion of the book, which was not completely favorable. So we'll have the authors here next week for a full hour of reminiscences about Abbie Hoffman. And just a reminder, Matthew Finch will be back to do our annual Thanksgiving Day musical review on November 24th at 3 o'clock. Hope after you've eaten a nice vegetarian meal that you can tune in for some music on WBAI that afternoon. Again, we're talking with 2-time Academy Award and nominee Sylvia Miles, artist Lisa Hoke, who opens tonight at the Haradner Romley Gallery at 107 Sullivan Street, and Stuart Haradner, the amanuensis of the Haradner Romley Gallery, is here as well.
Isn't it amanuensis?
I can't pronounce that. Amanuensis. Well, thank I've you. I've always wondered how to.
I've had several amanuensis.
Amanuensis.
Amanuensis is interesting because it's not really a Girl Friday or a Man Friday. An amanuensis is actually
a dog's body
that you really depend on in an emotional way as well to help you in what you're doing. So that I actually have been disappointed by some of my amanuensis.
Did you know, dear listeners, that Sylvia Miles is like a Mensa genius IQ, a chess player extraordinaire, and a wordsmith, far surpassing myself, I think, Sylvia. Wouldn't that be fair to say?
Yeah,
I think so. Played any chess lately?
Actually, to tell you the truth, I have. I don't want to admit it because people would think I don't have anything to do or I'm trying to. You know that I played chess for years, you know, and my career really went down the drain. And my agent used to call and say, what are you doing at the chess club? I said, I'm not at a chess club. I'm at the chess club. And he said, well, you got an audition. I said, oh, you know, and I would miss all these auditions. So one day I decided not to play until I became a star. And I stopped playing, and literally 9 months later, I didn't give birth, but I got nominated for Midnight Cowboy. So I had to give up chess. I was addicted to chess. I was what they call a chess bum, a legitimate, legal chess bum. You know, I had to say, I am a chess bum, otherwise I couldn't stop.
So you were like Jackie Gleason in The Hustler, only for chess. Actually went out and played some games for money, got into tournaments, did that sort of thing?
Oh, I played in tournaments then, but you know, I'm a fast chess player. I'm a very strong, fast chess player. You know.
Any Marlon Brando stories for us, Sylvia?
Do I have any Marlon Brando stories? Actually, the first time I met Marlon Brando, it almost have been the last time, was I had a cousin who was actually sharing an apartment with him. His name was Sidney Shaw, my cousin, and he used to write songs for Lena Horney. As a matter of fact, Evil Spelled Backwards is Love, you know, he wrote that. And he said, and I was just starting out in the theater, or I wanted to go to dramatic school or something, and he said, I want you to come and meet Marlon Brando. I'm living, and he was sharing a loft, which at that time was on Washington Square South. Now I think it's a building that's one of the NYU buildings, but it had this huge room, and there was a woman sharing it with them. She was about 8 feet tall, and she was ironing something on the ironing board, and Marlon Brando was sitting slouched over in the corner, and there was a sort of ferocious dog there. And my cousin, and I felt like Cinderella sitting there, and suddenly a great big roach, and it was very quiet, and this great big roach walked across the floor. It took and nobody did anything. As it kept getting nearer and nearer, it kept getting bigger and bigger. It was the biggest bug I ever saw in my home. It was probably a water bug, but you know, and I thought to myself, oh my God, is this what it means being in the theater? You know, I mean, this was big enough. It was frightening. So
it's probably a rat.
So many years later, I was shooting a film in in Little Italy, actually, Who Killed Mary What's-Her-Name, that starred Red Buttons and me, and introduced Alice Playton. I mean, I know these are not famous people, but you know what I mean. And Marlon Brando was shooting The Godfather. And in the next block, and somehow or other, we ended up sitting out on the street next to each other on these little boxes, you know, while we were shooting. And he looked over at me, and he had that makeup as the Godfather, you know, with all the cotton in his teeth and in his mouth. And I looked at him, and I said, you probably don't remember, but the last time I saw you, there was a roach in the room. And he looked at me like I was crazy. And I said, I'm Sid Shaw's cousin. And he laughed hysterically.
You know, a lot of people have been telling Stuart Herodner and Paul Romley to move into a bigger space, but they've stuck it out on Sullivan Street in their beautiful cul-de-sac. And in this month's Art Forum, you can read a terrific review of Jack Whitten's last show at Herodner. Romley, why do top names like Lisa Hoke, Mira Shore, and Jack Whitten stay with your gallery when they could be at Pace? Why is that, Stuart?
Our sense of humor and fair play.
Watch that mic. Go ahead.
No, actually, the good great Lord, I don't even want to think about the question. I just want to knock and thank the Lord for my good luck. we're very, you know, we're straightforward about what it is that we try to do. We try to do it as well as possible from this modest space. And, you know, there's a million ways to skin a cat. You know, it can be done very modestly, very adventurously. We do every, the other day we had a very funny dynamic. We were addressing Lisa's invitations to get out in the mail very last minute, sort of. Paul was out of town, and we had a friend of Lisa's, Jessica Stockholder, come by and to visit and look at this show, a first person sort of in town other than us to see the show. And I ran to quickly put, quickly picked up the invitations, came back, started putting labels on it. And here's Jessica, here's Lisa, here am I, and we're all putting labels on, and I'm freaking out because these are all artists that I respect, and here, and I know, you know, Robert Miller and Andre Emmerich are not upstairs frantically putting labels on stuff. It's just, you know, it's that old sort of let's put on a show.
Yeah, but that on hands, thing is what
get
impresses
it done. You know,
an artist.
You would have to have a handful of stories about the person who doesn't show up, and how somebody fills in. I mean, it's the, you just fill in. You do what you need to do. And
sure,
we work with a handful of really terrific people, and we try to do the best for them that we can, and they sure as hell do the best for us that they can. And it's back to that risk thing. They took a risk with us, and they're riding it out, and we're trying to do some good things.
You're also very good at placing artists in museum shows in Florida, Connecticut, et cetera. Is that because of your Cooper Union connections, Mr. Horodner?
No. The things that I, you know, if I have a strength, hopefully, it's that I can get a little bit of an overview and start to put things in combination that don't often get thought of that way, you know, to pursue the film analogies. It's, you know, casting against type. It's pulling somebody from one setting and putting them into something that they might not normally fit in, but just becomes a much juicier situation.
Lisa Hoke, are you going to participate in the upcoming Jasper Johns experiment that Stuart has fabricated?
No, I'm not, but...
Why not?
He is not inviting any gallery artist to participate.
Wow, why? Are you nuts? What about Lisa? Doesn't she get an exception?
No, I don't want an exception, actually.
Now, what they've done, Sylvia, is they've taken this little Jasper Johns giveaway that MoMA sent out about 1970 of a Target. And, Stuart, you can take it from there.
This is a show we're going to try to do for February if everybody gets their act together and finishes the thing. Paul and I started to buy these little Jasper Johns multiples 3 or 4 years ago, knowing we would eventually be able to do a show with them. It's the 1970 Jasper Johns Target. It's the empty Target with the three watercolor discs, red, yellow, and blue, little brush. And it's a signed Jasper Johns and blank. So the thing is a conceptual invitation for a collaborative act. You get the brush, you fill in the Target, you and Jasper Johns have just done a collaboration. It's one of those things that is so beautiful as a object, as an offer, no one's ever done it. Or when recently I met Jasper Johns at a Museum of Modern Art opening, got to ask him whether anybody's done it, and he just said it was a bad assumption on my part that nobody had, but he didn't know if anybody had either. So we've given out the 10 or so targets that we have acquired to a wide range of artists, and we thought we've got 6, 7
Gosh,
artists.
Gosh, I wish you'd given me one. I would have loved to do it.
Sylvia, that's...
I went to Pratt Institute.
Go hustle and find another one for you.
My dad graduated from Cooper Union, by the way.
Oh, great. Yeah. So all these fun people are going to finish it. And if we started to ask one person at the gallery, I'd have to ask everybody, and that's a complete other show. And Lisa and Jack and Mira would all do interesting things with it.
Yeah, but it would be nice to include an actor in that.
I think he just made an offer, Sylvia.
I think every artist I've included in it is already an actor. But on the other hand, that would be interesting. An artist, a poet. We're trying to widen it up a little
bit.
But it's certainly now 25 years after Johns did it, and enough time has gone past so people can be irreverent with it or complimentary and pay homage if they like. Most of the people I've invited, I think, are going to do some havoc with it. And it was a open gesture. I gave it out. I don't know what I'm getting back.
It's amazing that in 1970, Sylvia and Lisa and Stuart, the Museum of Modern Art used to give away little Jasper Johns editions if you got, like, a membership in the museum. How times have changed.
Yeah, and, you know, well, it's the same thing as, invitations. I remember in the early 80s when I bought my house in Woodstock, which I've subsequently sold, I had an entire bureau filled with invitations that came during the 70s, And some of them were literally works of art. I mean, they were giveaways. They were phenomenal. And over the years, you know, economics being what they are, you know, they, and I never, for some reason or another, I probably should have collected them all and given them to a museum to put all those together, because all the museums gave away things.
Well, that spirit's coming back now, though. I mean, because of cheaply made objects or multiples, and just the generosity, trying to bridge towards people and get them to come back to the art world, which clearly needs some support. That's becoming a sensibility that just makes much more sense now. Cheap editions, catalogs, which you know, Charlie, we do, and give away, and hopefully write in them and make them accessible. So
I'm waiting for the little Lisa Hoke doll giveaway. Maybe like a bobbinhead.
Waiting a long time.
I'm waiting for the spool giveaway.
Well, actually, Stuart and I did send out a little giveaway to... And Charlie's must have gotten lost in the mail. I think.
No, we didn't send one to Charlie.
We didn't?
That was a conscious effort.
What was it I made
some small thread drawings and put them in envelopes. Put them in envelopes and sent them out.
Thanks a lot, Lisa.
Yours is somewhere, I'm sure.
I feel like we have your support.
Lisa, what about embroidery?
Oh, no, we didn't.
I have a lot of embroidery
thread. Support.
Do you need any embroidery thread?
Sure. Yeah. I never say no to any giveaway.
Her studio is amazing. It's just a mass of material. But we'll ask her about buttons, Sylvia. You know more about buttons than anyone I know, among other things.
Yeah. Sure. I used to live at Tenda Button.
That's a great place.
What about the Sylvia Miles Film Festival? That was last August?
Oh, it was great. Yes, it was co-sponsored, by the way, speaking about museums, by the Saratoga Film Forum and the Hyde Museum, which is in Glens Falls, which is a private museum not unlike the Frick, and that has the most extraordinary collection I've ever seen in a private museum. I mean, Tintorettos and Jacopettis and you name it. I mean, it was incredible.
And Sylvia Miles movies.
And they did a retrospective for 4 weeks, right? And they chose five of the landmark films that they thought that they chose. And the director of the museum, Kathleen Monahan, who was at the Whitney for a number of years, she's the one that set it up. And I got to go to Saratoga. I got to go during the Travers Week, the racing week, which was very exciting. I was there for the Yatto race, and the race was dedicated to Yatto. And Leo Castelli's daughter, by the way, is married to the president of Yatto. Did you know that?
No, convenient.
Nina, yes, And went to their house, and it was a wonderful time. That was definitely a combination of artists and dancers and actors and so forth. And then I got. It, you know, we forget, by the way, how beautiful New York State is. You know, I got to stay up I went to Lake George. I was at the Sagamore and Glens Falls. It's so beautiful up there. And they chose my first film, which was Parish, oddly enough, which was the last film that Claudette Colbert did and the last of the great big Warner Brothers. And that film, I don't know if you know, they just, anyway, Parish, Midnight Cowboy, Heat, Farewell My Lovely, and Evil Under the Sun. But Parish was my first film, and I was making $38 a week at the time in the balcony, the Jean Genet play at Circle in the Square. And I got so excited when I was hired for Parish. I went out and bought white matching luggage and a mink stole. And it turns out that it was being shot in Hartford, Connecticut, in the tobacco fields, and I couldn't get the luggage into this compartment in the train. So it was covered with mud. And I made my debut with Troy Donahue and Claudette Colbert, Carl Malden, and Dean Jagger. And it was Connie Stevens.
And An Evil Under the Sun is an Agatha Christie movie.
You were
great in that.
That was a wonderful.
Another grand ensemble cast.
A wonderful experience shooting that in Mallorca and in London. And, you know, Peter Ustinov, Maggie Smith, Diana Rigg, James Mason was my husband. Yeah, it was wonderful. And I remember meeting James Mason for the first time. I was sort of, it was funny, you know, having him play my husband. I had, you know, not that I'm that
He's
young.
He's not the
but,
first person that would come to mind, particularly.
Yes, right, exactly, you know. But we got on very well.
I'm going to go find James Sherman because he is supposed to do a report on tape at 3:52. So we're going to cut back to Harmonica Fats and Bernie Pearl. This cut is called Blabbermouth Man. How apropos. Stay tuned. We got a couple of minutes to wind things up because James Sherman has brought in a report on the Ballet Metropolitano de Caracas, which we're going to play on tape. Mr. James Sherman, one of our arts producers here. I want to thank Michael G. Haskins for sitting on the board today and just remind you to stay tuned for Shelf Life at 4 o'clock, followed by Talk Back with Playfellow Benjamin and Greg Thomas at 4:30 and the WBAI Evening News at 6 o'clock. Lisa Hoke's show opens at the Haradner Romley Gallery tonight at 6 o'clock at 107 Sullivan Street. And Sylvia Miles, got any plugs for us offhand? We should have sent everyone to go last night to the reading.
Oh, no, that's okay. You know, I figure everywhere I go, I'm working.
Ain't it the truth?
If I'm not there working, I'm looking for the work. People say, gee, you go out so much. I said, you better believe it. I said, you know,
Do you know you've become an entry in the Oxford English Dictionary?
Have I really?
Yes, you have.
What did
you
say?
You have passed into the lexicon forever.
For?
It's for someone who basically bops without dropping.
No kidding.
You know, just keeps going like, you know, the little rabbit in the commercials.
You're kidding, really?
Yes.
You've seen it?
I have seen it reported in the tabloids. Where else? How believable is that?
I was very impressed when one of these tabloids said that they're now, that Michael Jackson is being seen as, he's being called the Sylvia Miles of the rock world. I thought that was going a bit far.
And thanks to Haradner and Lisa Hoke. We'll see you tonight at the Haradner Romley Gallery at 107. And we have time to thank you for listening and go right to James Sherman's report. Good afternoon.